beware of politicians who you agree with all the time, because 100% they are lying to you. USA,
home of the brave. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now.
From the land of the free and the brave, USA, I love my country, they can't take that.
All right, welcome back. Mike Sparazza here in studio today. I have a special guest now, Sean Parnell, a combat veteran, a New York Times bestselling author, and host of Battleground on Red Voice Media. Sean, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Mike, thanks for having me.
I'm going to get into your show in a little bit when we finish, because I want to hear about your show and all the good stuff that you're doing. But first, I want to talk about, you know, this Israeli-Hamas conflict that we've seen now for the last better part of the last two and a half weeks. Pretty sad stuff all around, seeing what's going on to the, you know, the people of Israel, the innocent people of Palestine, too. There's innocent people getting hurt, killed, treated very poorly in that region. But I want to start with your thoughts today. Today we are recording this. Joe Biden is in Israel right now. Your thoughts on him going out there. And I, again, I'm going to give you my thoughts quick. I don't know, Sean, how this guy is going to do any good there. He can barely talk to the people of America in a pre-read statement. I can't imagine it going very well when he's sitting there with a reader.
Yeah, there's a reason why, you know, when Joe Biden is giving a scripted speech, people say that the teleprompter writer or the teleprompter itself is the most powerful entity in the world at that specific moment. And it's because you're exactly right, Mike. Joe Biden can barely string together a coherent sentence. He can barely walk up a small flight of stairs. I often say on the show that he's just an animated corpse. I mean, it's like every morning they dip the guy in the Lazarus pit and it's less effective as every day of his presidency goes on. And so it doesn't fill me with confidence that he's going into, you know, one of the most complex geopolitical situations in the world, and has been one of the most complex geopolitical situations in the world for the past 100 years. So, in fact, you know, as we've seen so far, it means looks like almost all of our Arab partners in the area have canceled meetings with Joe Biden based on the propaganda that Israel hit a hospital, which of course now we know is not the case. And of course we saw the news this morning of Biden in a meeting with Netanyahu. I mean, honestly, Mike, just rambling about stuff that was just totally incoherent and didn't make any sense. He trailed off into the distance. And so it's not an overstatement to say, and it really upsets it. I hate like when members of Congress and politicians are like, World War III is on the horizon. It's like, isn't that a commentary on the world that we live in when people think World War III, oh my God, it's just a political talking point. But it is true that with this guy at the helm, it's very, very clear that our enemies see this and are taking full advantage of it. And that's why you see all the chaos happening around the world.
Yeah, and obviously this isn't the first bit of chaos we've seen over the last 3 years. There's plenty behind it as well. And here's my thing too, like the Joe Biden thing, like I get it. If it's like a PR thing you got to do, that's fine. But what's starting to really irritate me, Sean, is now we have people like my governor in New York, Kathy Hochul, that's like, I need to get to Israel and really meet with these folks. Kathy Hochul can't run New York State. What the hell is she going to do in the Middle East?
I mean, it's such a great point. And obviously, New York has problems of its own, whether it's with Kathy Hochul or Eric Adams, the mayor in New York City, you know, who, by the way, just in the past month said that Israel was going to, or I'm sorry, that New York City was going to collapse because of the migrant crisis, goes to Mexico, meets with Mexican leaders, and then comes back and promptly say that we need to keep our borders open. So yeah. I don't know how those two statements exist in the same world, but I'll tell you like something that concerns me greatly, circling back like Jen Psaki style to the Israeli-Gaza conflict and the tragedy that happened there. A couple things on that. And let's just walk through this at 30,000 feet. When Hamas attacked Israel, I say this often, Mike, but it is underselling it. It does a disservice to what happened to the Israelis by calling it an attack, because it wasn't an attack. It was a massacre, a targeted massacre of innocent men, women, children, elderly, Holocaust survivors. Seriously, take a second and just really let that sink in. Somehow you survived the Holocaust, you're in your 90s, and now you're captured by Hamas and being taunted on camera for the world to see. That is evil incarnate. It's horrific. It should not happen in our world. I mean, they murdered, killed babies. They raped women. They paraded these women around the streets, bleeding, as if they're some sort of trophies. They took women, children, babies as hostages. They're using those hostages as human shields right now. I mean, all of these things, every single one of these things is considered a war crime of the highest order. You know, so Israel responds, right? And by the way, all these Republican politicians come out and immediately start saying that Israel has a right to defend itself. But I think Republicans need to really hone their messaging here because, of course, as we saw yesterday with the propaganda about the hospital, the public opinion fight in the messaging is critically important. It's not enough just to say Israel has a right to defend itself. Well, what does that mean? Right. As a military tactical term, it means that Israel has a right, you know, to fire a few indirect fire attacks or bomb a few Hamas targets in Gaza. And that, hey, look, it's proportional. Right. Like, there should be a ceasefire now. And that's what you've heard from Democrat politicians taking advantage of the rhetoric that Republicans use with the whole phrase proportional response and ceasefire. OK, but what Republicans have to get comfortable saying is that that Israel has a right to eradicate and destroy Hamas. I mean, and the reason for that is that Israel has proposed and extended an olive branch to Hamas and to the Palestinian Authority multiple times in the past 75 years and proposed multiple two-state solutions with the Palestinian authorities, and Hamas have, of course, rejected each and every time. And so there comes a point in time where you have to say enough is enough. And I'd also say this. You know, the Palestinian Authority and Hamas, they demand a two-state solution. And what that means is they demand a country of their own. Well, if you're evaluating the potential of a country, right, and you're asked, say you're just like asking questions, and you're like, what's the charter? Like, what's the mission of your country? And the number one mission of that country is to commit genocide against your neighbor. Maybe you don't deserve a country. I'm sorry. Maybe you're not entitled to that. So the idea that the Palestinian Authority and Hamas are entitled to a country is I reject that premise right off the bat. So my point is that Israel made a commitment after that attack to go after Hamas and destroy them. And I said very publicly that they have the two things need to happen in order for them to accomplish that mission. They have to have the military capability to do it. Israel has that. Now they have to have the tactical flexibility and the space and the freedom, which means it free from international pressure to do it. And that is where Israel is going to have problems. And that is where the Biden administration has done everything they can to hamstring the Israeli Defense Force in this way. Israel was poised to invade Gaza after surgical strikes on Hamas on day one. They were right on the border, and the Biden administration has done everything that they can to delay that, knowing full well that every day they delay, the percentage of Israeli casualties that will happen if a ground invasion actually happens goes up exponentially. And right now, and this is just military doctrine speaking, Mike, you know, right now the Israelis are poised to take anywhere, because of the delay, between 33% and 60% casualties in the devastation that surrounds Gaza and what they call military operations on urban terrain. That's not Sean Parnell talking. That's U.S. military doctrine. Casualties will be high because Hamas has had time to set booby traps and place snipers, to lay in complex ambushes, to put in IEDs. I mean, it's just going to be treacherous as hell. And ultimately, that's why I believe Biden is in Israel to delay that invasion further, because Biden made it his objective very, very clear, Mike, that he does not want Israel to invade Gaza. He said that on 60 Minutes on Sunday. So here we are.
So I think what's frustrating for me, I'm a person that's never had military experience. So I'm speaking to the likes of, we should be trusting the people that have military experience, right? We should be talking to more people like you. I interviewed Joe Kent last week too. People that have had experience, great guy. We should be listening to those types of people, not Joe Biden, not Rashida Tlaib, people that actually know the battlefield and what's going on out there. And Joe Kent said exactly what you just said, Sean. They're going to booby trap everything. And this is not, you know, combat like you see in a movie or something. He's like, this is the most dangerous of combat that you're going to face going into buildings, which you have no idea who's in or out of there, right? You have no idea if it's a bomb, if it's people, if it's hostages. You have no idea. And the level of complexity of it is off the charts. And that's what bothers me. We have all these talking heads on TV, on social media, everywhere, that know nothing about it and don't care to, so they can just push a narrative. It drives me insane.
You're exactly right, Mike. And I'll tell you, just for your listeners, for your viewers, why it was critically important from a tactical standpoint and to minimize civilian casualties that Israel invade immediately after their airstrikes. There's something in the military called echelonment of fires. I've done this. I've fought in this terrain hundreds, if not thousands of times in Afghanistan. Yep. And the goal with echelonment of fires is you hit with your biggest bombs first as you're moving, as infantry is moving to the objective. And as you get closer to the objective, you diminish your firepower. So you go from maybe an airstrike to artillery. And then as you get even closer, you go from artillery to mortars. And once you get even closer to the objective, you turn off the mortars and then infantry hits the objective. The reason for that is you don't want to give your enemy even a second to breathe. And so every second that you delay gives them a second to consolidate, reorganize, and fortify their defenses and harden their defenses to make an invasion in Gaza in this specific tactical example almost completely untenable. And here's the deal. Joe Biden knows that. And there are people in our military that are telling him that, but he's just completely blowing it off. And so he's blowing it off and he's talking out of both sides of his mouth, saying Israel has a right to defend itself while simultaneously freeing up $6 billion in sanction-free money to Iran, who's then using that money to export terror around the world. Crazy.
And what scares me even sometimes more than this is these people, you know, our American troops, they don't want to die when they go to war. They know that's a risk, right? But these guys on the other side with Hamas, they like praise dying out there and blowing up people and not caring what happens. You're facing a much different enemy than I think a lot of American people, especially these Gen Z kids and millennials, understand. Like, this is not like love wins out there. This is the scariest of the scary, the most dangerous of the most dangerous. And, you know, I'm going to move to my next point here with Rashida Tlaib. This attack on the hospital, I'll call it an attack, I guess, but on the hospital yesterday ended up being what it looks like right now from the actual data and evidence to be a weapon used by either Hamas or somebody like Hamas, a terrorist group that was misfired or shot there on purpose. I don't know. But here's my problem. We have American politicians coming out that moment, Sean, saying, you see, Israel did this. They killed, you know, innocent people. They went after a hospital. That's really dangerous, is it not?
It's incredibly dangerous. And not just that, you know, first of all, it was strangely all at the exact same time that hospital was hit. Right. And I'll get into the tactics of how that happened in a second. But the exact same time, the Associated Press, the Washington Post, the New York Times, and Democrat politicians all echoed the same thing. They elevated terrorist propaganda. And that's exactly what it was, terrorist propaganda, because who fired that rocket? Now it looks like it was Islamic Jihad, which is a State Department declared terrorist group. Okay. They elevated terrorist propaganda and they immediately blamed Israel. And what happened is that caused a chain reaction around the world, caused violence and uprisings and U.S. and Israeli embassies all throughout the Middle East. The blame for that, and there needs to be accountability for this, but the blame for that should be laid at the feet of these fake news media outlets and these journalists who are not just the enemy of the people, they're an enemy of global stability. There needs to be accountability for that, and especially these Democrat members of Congress. I mean, why they haven't been expelled from Congress for telling these lies is beyond me, because you can bet that if it were Republicans doing irresponsible things like this, the Democrats would remove them from committees if they had the majority and do everything they can to expel them from Congress.
Here's what kills me, though. It's so anti-America in every stretch of the imagination. These people are the most anti-America humans of all time. You should not be representing our country if you hate the country. And that's what the Rashida Tlaibs, the Ilhan Omars, the AOCs, they hate America, Sean. They should not be in politics.
I mean, I completely agree. And just look, if you look at the facts of yesterday's attack, because I want to make sure I touch on this. So I think like 30 to 40% of rockets fired by these terrorist organizations from Gaza into Israel fall short. And that's because, I mean, people are wondering, the Democrats are out there like AOC talking about collective punishment and how dare the Israelis cut off water. But the reason why the Palestinians don't have water is that Hamas dug up their water pipes and uses them as field rocket launchers. And that's why these rockets fall short. And that's also why the Palestinians don't have water right now, because of Hamas. And the moral responsibility for civilians caught in the middle on the side of Gaza and the civilians murdered in Israel is because of Hamas and not the Israeli Defense Force.
Where does this end? Because they have not gone in yet. The IDF has not gone in yet. I would assume, and to your point, I would hope soon, because as the days go on, it gets more and more dangerous. But when do they go in? And then how does this conflict start, end, finish? I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah, it's a good question, and it's a complicated answer. And I think, you know, is what the Israeli military, along with their, Bibi Netanyahu, is going to have to decide, and they're going to have to evaluate what's called the tactical risk and balance it with the mission objective. And what I mean by that is, if the mission objective is to destroy Hamas, you have to look at the tactical risk and assess, you know, what the cost of that mission would mean for the Israeli military. And right now, 33% to 60% casualties. If you're a military commander in Israel, I mean, that's tough, man. That's tough to say that you're going to, you know, casualty doesn't necessarily mean death, but it could mean, you know, a severe injury or wounds that then the Israelis are going to have to take care of. And it's just a real tough decision. They're going to have to make that decision on their own. But here's the deal. If it ends up, if Israel does not destroy Hamas, the cycle of violence will continue. And you can bet that Iran is going to continue to fund and export terror around the world. They're going to fund Hezbollah. They might even attack Israel from the north, which that really scares me, because if Iran and Hezbollah attack Israel from the north, it triggers the War Powers Act. It actually complies us by law to respond to that invasion of an ally, which would be an escalatory possibility that would just be a very, very scary thing, especially when you consider that the war in Ukraine seems to be going on in perpetuity, along with U.S. taxpayer dollars going to fund Ukrainian pensions with no end in sight and no mission. You add to that a war essentially in the Middle East against the Islamic world, because the war continues to escalate. And if American troops find themselves dragged into the conflict, you can bet that that will galvanize the Islamic world against us. And so it's something, you know, like, and again, it doesn't exactly inspire confidence that Joe Biden's at the helm trying to navigate these really tough diplomatic times. So it's, we'll see.
That's exactly what I was going to end with there. Could there be a worse leader for us and really the world, right? There's not a worse leader for the world right now than a guy, you know, you mentioned before, I call him Weekend at Bernie's, because that's what we're dealing with here. Like, we're just moving him around. We're, you know, he's doing as he's told, literally. It's just not very good. Let's come back to the U.S. for a second, though, Sean, because I think there's a few things I want to talk about. The House of Representatives, the conservatives, the Republicans, for lack of a better term, can't get their crap together. I was, and I don't know your feelings on this, we could talk about it. What Matt Gaetz did, I was all in favor of in terms of getting a Kevin McCarthy out. However, this is now dragging on. We've had like two recesses in the last 2 weeks. We're just not getting the job done. And that, to me, is a little bit concerning. We need a House Speaker. Whether it's Jim Jordan, whether it's Donald Trump, whoever it is, we need somebody that has a spine, and we need to get somebody in there that's willing to make deals and get rolling and actually do what's best for the people of America. And we don't have that.
Well, I'll give, this is what I talked about on my show for the last couple of weeks. And I supported what Matt Gaetz did in the initial 15 votes for Speaker. I thought he got very good concessions that made the House of Representatives a more effective legislative body. I think all around good for Republicans in the House. But I was critical of what Matt Gaetz did because, you know, as a military guy, you don't blow up the system without having a plan. And it was very, very clear that Matt Gaetz and those eight did not have a plan. And I'll offer this to the listeners here. And by the way, if you pay attention to me, watch my career, watch my show, you know that there's no love lost between me and Kevin McCarthy. I'm not defending him. I'm not defending Gaetz. I, generally speaking, do not like any politician because I don't really think they care much about the American people. I care about the American people. So I want to basically just give them something to think about here. You know, the Matt Gaetzes of the world and a lot of the conservative right and people that I consider very, very close friends of mine who are in talk radio, had said multiple times, Kevin McCarthy, the Speaker of the House, he works behind closed doors with Democrats to make deals, and he's a rhino and he's bad for the country. Well, let me put this out there. If Kevin McCarthy really was a rhino, which, by the way, is a term that's overused. I've heard people call Thomas Massey a rhino. Thomas Massey is incredibly conservative. But if Kevin McCarthy really was a rhino and really was working to accomplish Democrat goals behind closed doors, why would the Democrats 100% vote to get rid of the guy?
Right.
I mean, so there's that. And again, I mean, what I told people, Mike, is that look, this presents McCarthy's out. Doesn't matter. What's done is done. You know, get your stuff together, find a good conservative speaker. Cause we had a couple different things that could happen here. It's three different courses of actions that I see. One, we have an opportunity to elect a great conservative speaker, and you can bet if I were sitting in the U.S. House of Representatives right now, I'd vote for Jim Jordan, 100%, wouldn't even be a question. But my fear is that you have Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives that represent, one, swing districts, and two, Biden majority districts. Somehow they win, right? And we want those Republicans to stay in those seats. Otherwise, a Democrat controls those seats, and that ain't good for any of us. Those people eventually are going to start saying, what the hell's going on? We have to start doing something. And you're going to hear a lot in the coming weeks about bipartisan consensus candidates. My fear is that course of action two means a milquetoast Republican as Speaker of the House who's willing to work with Democrats, and that would be disastrous. And here's the third, what you call like the most dangerous course of action, an Akeem Jeffries speakership. Because Akeem Jeffries is at Universal 212. The Democrats are like the Borg. They're always united. They always circle their wagons. He's at 212 votes. He's five votes away from being Speaker of the House. And if that happens when Republicans have a majority, there's no damn excuse for that. And the blame for that, by the way, the blame for that would fall at the hands of those eight. I know that probably won't be a popular position, but they're the ones that blew it up in the first place. I'm sorry. It's just the truth. And it's just frustrating to me. This is the problem with Republicans. When they have power, they refuse to wield it. They can't get their act together, at least with Kevin McCarthy. And this is another thing that I'll say, Mike, like, there's an argument to be made for on the Republican side, because no Republican ever wants to be Speaker of the House. It's the worst, most thankless job in the world. And I guarantee you, mark my words, if Jim Jordan gets it in 6 months, people on talk radio are going to be calling Jim Jordan a rhino. Just how it is. No, that's why Republicans don't want the job. But it's the most thankless job in the world. And I would argue that you want a swamp killer in that role, somebody that knows DC, the ins and outs, where all the bodies are buried, right? If you have a congressman that's a great grassroots person, that you love that guy in your district, you think he's a conservative warrior, a guy like Jim Jordan, you'll never see him again in your district. He will either be in Washington performing and functioning as the Speaker of the House, or traveling around to different races across the country helping candidates to raise money. So if you've got a great grassroots congressman, you don't want him to be speaker. It's a horrible job. And so that's why it's just me speaking. I would much rather see Jim Jordan on the judiciary, where he was a hell of a lot more effective, taking the fight to Democrats. He's one of the few Republicans that can ask, you know, really tough questions, boxing these Democrat deep state bureaucrats in on many of his questions. He's unbelievably effective there. I'd like to see him stay there, you know, but hey, whatever. We'll see what happens today with the vote, but I am very, very worried about what I call the squish option, getting a wimpy Republican as Speaker of the House. Very worried.
Well, and you brought up if Jeffries wins it, the Republican Party might be dead, because people are going to be like, this is what you guys did. Like, this is what you guys did with control. You gave it to them.
Matt Gaetz is a friend of mine. I know him, met with him, had dinner at CPAC. I like the guy. I'm just saying. Like, this, the situation in the House right now is completely inexcusable.
Yep. And here's my thing. Look, Sean, I own a small business, right? If things need to get done, there's no such thing as like, we're on a 6-day recess. No, we get your ass in the chair. We're doing it right now. That's how it works, right?
Exactly.
You know, and that's my problem too with Republicans. And I guess if Democrats are involved in those decisions, when you don't have a speaker and then the Israeli conflict happens, like, we should have gotten that Monday. I don't care if it's a holiday, if it's a Sunday, whatever, we need to get this done. And they're not getting it done. And then, I don't know Congress maybe the way you do, but then we go and we debate Scalise, we debate Jim Jordan, we debate this one, that one. Then we go, and I know it's all about, you know, working deals and side deals, but we go to a vote, and it wasn't even close. The vote yesterday wasn't even close. It was 18 or 19, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. So you knew that going in, and then you don't vote again yesterday. You're supposed to vote again today. Who knows if we're in for another 15 votes, whatever it is. It just seems sloppy, and it seems like, again, the people that are losing are us Americans, number one. Number two, we're giving the Democrats every excuse to say, see, you guys are idiots. You guys don't know what you're doing at Republican. You're holding the American people hostage. We're giving them all that ammo right now. And that pisses me off, to be honest.
I completely agree. I hate hanging dirty laundry out there. It's like in a football game. It's like coming up with a plan in the huddle, a play in the huddle, and then going on the defense, what you're going to do. Well, here's something else I'll give you. You're a small business owner, which means you're a leader. The motion to vacate rule right now, which Nancy Pelosi, under her speakership, completely removed, right? Yep. Made it difficult to file a motion to vacate. We got that concession back when Kevin McCarthy was initially voted speaker through Matt Gaetz and the concessions that he got. But let me just tell you this. You're a leader, right? Then you know that you are not an effective leader if you're not pissing your own people off every now and again.
Correct.
That's just how it goes. So let me ask you that. In your small business, if you had an employee who, you know, a policy decision that you made pissed that employee off, and he's like, you know what? I got one person filed to fire this dude, my boss. I'm going to file it. Bang, gun, you're gone. I mean, does that make for a very functional business? I would even say that, like, there are many conservative grassroots people out there that say, oh, the motion to vacate is great, it's power to the people and stuff. But it really, it's like, if you're the Republican Speaker of the House, it's like herding cats, because Republicans are very ideologically diverse. You're going to piss people off. And every time you piss somebody off, you have to worry about getting fired and voted out. Yep. How does that make for a more effective legislative body in that specific rule?
I will say this too. I feel like that is how America is, period, right now with everything, right? Like, you can't be hard on kids in school or they're going to go home and tell their parents, right? Like,
That's a great point.
I also help coach football. Like, the way I was coached 15 years ago is far different than the way you coach now. Why? Because you'll get thrown out of coaching, right? I mean, like, everything now is so hypersensitive to everything. It's like one little thing, boom, gone. One little thing, boom.
That is such a great point. It is really a microcosm of how the country is right now. And look, I'm not trying to defend McCarthy or defend the establishment or defend this guy or that. I don't like politicians. Okay. Yeah. But I'm just trying to give people different ways to think about things, because it's oftentimes not as simple as it's presented in the media. Like, if you're going to sit there and call it, hey, the fake news media, like, okay, well, that means that they lie to you and they do it often to push a narrative. I don't really give a crap about that. Right. I care about, like, giving people the opportunity to have the facts and decide for themselves. And people might like what I have to say. They might not. But this is the one thing that I made people promises on the campaign trail all the time. Beware of politicians who you agree with all the time, because 100% they are lying to you. The only promise that I made to people on the campaign trail was that I 100% guarantee you, we're not always going to agree, but you're always going to know where I stand on an issue. If that means we have to meet in the middle, well, isn't that the essence of governing? But we don't get that in this world today, right? So that's what I'm trying to like, give people different perspectives on this speaker fight, because it's all too easy to say, oh, we want Jim Jordan, vote conservative. Well, of course I do too, but it's oftentimes more complicated than just that.
And I will say this, I think for me, you know, one of the things, John Fetterman joked about it on Stephen Colbert, like, we're not sending our best to Washington. Yeah. Like, I don't know if he was trying to make fun of himself or he was being serious, but I actually agree with John Fetterman on one thing. We're not, right? I mean, you have people in Congress that have been there for 40 years. You have people that are like AOC that are on a power trip and don't care about the people in her district. I'm just telling you. And that's what I think we have to get back to. We're going to go back, Sean, to getting, you know, Congress right, the House right, the Senate right, the presidency right, governors. But we need to actually get people that care about the country in there. The problem is, it's a pretty thankless job at the end of the day. And most people, like me as a small business owner, Sean, I'm like, I'm going to make way more money doing what I'm doing, and then I don't have to get mucked up in the middle of it. I'd rather talk about it on a show like this than go into Congress personally. And that's sad. That's not how it should be, but that's where we are now.
I've you're 100% right. People see how dirty, disgusting, gross politics are, and they say, I don't want any part of that. And so what you end up with is a bunch of low talent mouth breathers. And in the case of AOC, her stupidity is actually dangerous on the world stage and causes violence. So that's what you get what you vote for, unfortunately. And so, I mean, as Dan Bongino says, you just show all the time, it's just not bad enough yet. And once it's bad enough, people might change their perspective, but we're not there yet.
Yeah. And, you know, again, America continues to lose on this every time. The taxpayer of America continues to lose.
100%.
That's just the worst. Let's talk about you for a second. New show, Battleground. Well, not new show, but new show on Red Voice Media, Battleground. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I've got a show every single night. It's live at 5 p.m., the 5 p.m. block, 5 to 6. And we just hammer news, politics, culture of the day, try to cover the stories that the fake news media doesn't cover, because that's often where the stories really are. I've been doing it for 5 weeks now, and it's been one hell of a ride. And so It'd be awesome if you're watching, listening, you know, obviously go subscribe to Red Voice Media. If you're watching on Red Voice Media, go subscribe to Battleground Live, because it's important for us to have what I like to call overlapping fields of fire, good conservatives supporting other good conservatives, because the more united we are, the more effective we are. And so please, you know, like and subscribe to my channel on Battleground Live. It's on Rumble only. I was canceled on YouTube my YouTube page was nuked pretty quickly, but I'm on Rumble. You can like and subscribe to there. I really appreciate it if you do that. But yeah, it's been an amazing ride, man.
And how do people find you on social media? That's another big one. Yeah.
I'm at Sean Parnell USA on Twitter. I'm at the same on Getter and Truth Social. I'm on Facebook and Official Sean Parnell on Instagram.
Any ideas of running for office again anytime soon?
Well, yeah. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think I definitely have to run again in the future. The question is when. And the last time I ran, the Democrats and even establishment Republican Party went after my family and small children and exploited all that. You know, back to your point, like, why the hell would anybody want to run if they're going to have to endure that? Yeah. And the reason that they did it is I was an outsider, wasn't controlled by the establishment. That was just it. And so I think I'm going to wait for my kids to get a little bit older so that they're a little bit, it's easier for them to handle. And once they're older and in a more appropriate age, I mean, we're going to get back into the fight. And so that may be a couple of years, maybe.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. And I mean, even in the media, right? I mean, we take a beating. I take it on social media all the time.
100%.
You get your death threats, you get everything, right? Pretty scary times we're living in. That you can't have a dissenting opinion or you are truly the enemy. That is a problem, especially if you're a MAGA voter or a America First person. You're public enemy number one. I feel like we're all in that boat at this point. But Sean Parnell, best-selling author, combat veteran, and host of Battleground, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Mike. Take care. USA,
home of the brave. Ladies and gentlemen, distinguished guests, and my fellow citizens, America's comeback starts right now. From the land of the free and the brave, USA, I love my country, they can't take that away. Against all odds, he made.